Dune by Frank Herbert. This book consists of three parts and is 489 pages long. The following material appears on the dust jacket of the book. Unique in the depth of its characterization and the extraordinary detail of the world it creates. I know nothing comparable to it except The Lord of the Rings. Arthur C. Clarke. Selected in a reader's poll in 1975 as the greatest novel of imagination of all time, Dune's creation of a richly detailed world utterly unlike our own is only the beginning of its achievement. Arrakis, the desert planet called Dune, is the home of the unforgettable family Atreides, the splendid Fremen people, the awesome sandworms, creatures so huge that one might swallow 100 men in a gulp. Dune is the source of brilliant survival techniques devised by the desert dwellers, the focus of political intrigues of exquisite subtlety, and the nexus of a centuries-old plot to create a super-being. An amazing feat of creation. P. Schuyler Miller. Powerful, convincing, and most ingenious. Robert A. Heinlein. Winner of both Nebula and Hugo Awards as the best science fiction novel of its year. Voted greatest novel ever in a poll in 1975 of the readers of Locus, over such works as The Lord of the Rings, 1984, Stranger in a Strange Land. Frank Herbert was born in 1920 in Tacoma, Washington. He served in the U.S. Navy in World War II. He has worked as a photographer, television cameraman, oyster diver, lay analyst, and as a radio newsman. He was for many years a newspaperman in West Coast cities from Los Angeles to Seattle, including more than 10 years on the San Francisco Examiner. He lives with his family at the northeast corner of the northwest corner of the state of Washington. A project of his there is turning his 6 wooded acres into an ecological demonstration project to show how a high quality of life can be maintained with a minimum drain on the total energy system. Dedication. To the people whose labors go beyond ideas into the realm of real materials, to the dry land ecologists, wherever they may be, in whatever time they work, this effort at prediction is dedicated in humility and admiration. Book 1. Dune. A beginning is the time for taking the most delicate care that the balances are correct. This every sister of the Bene Gesserit knows. To begin your study of the life of Muad'Dib, then, take care that you first place him in his time. Born in the 57th year of the Padishah Emperor, Shaddam IV. And take the most special care that you locate Muad'Dib in his place, the planet Arrakis. Do not be deceived by the fact that he was born on Caladan and lived his first 15 years there. Arrakis, the planet known as Dune, is forever his place. From Manual of Muad'Dib by the Princess Irulan. In the week before their departure to Arrakis, when all the final scurrying about had reached a nearly unbearable frenzy, an old crone came to visit the mother of the boy, Paul. It was a warm night at Castle Caladan, and the ancient pile of stone that had served the Atreides family as home for 26 generations bore that cooled sweat feeling it acquired before a change in the weather. The old woman was let in by the side door down the vaulted passage by Paul's room, and she was allowed a moment to peer in at him where he lay in his bed. By the half-light of a suspensor lamp, dimmed and hanging near the floor, the awakened boy could see a bulky female shape at his door, standing one step ahead of his mother. The old woman was a witch shadow, hair like matted spider webs, hooded round darkness of features, eyes like glittering jewels.
"Is he not small for his age, Jessica?"
the old woman asked. Her voice wheezed and twanged like an untuned balisette. Paul's mother answered in her soft contralto,
"The Atreides are known to start late getting their growth, Your Reverence."
"So I've heard, so I've heard," wheezed the old woman. "Yet he's already 15.
"Yes, Your Reverence."
"He's awake and listening to us," said the old woman. "Sly little rascal."
She chuckled.
"But royalty has need of slyness. And if he's really the Kwisatz Haderach, well..."
Within the shadows of his bed, Paul held his eyes open to mere slits. 2 bird-bright ovals, the eyes of the old woman, seemed to expand and glow as they stared into his.
"Sleep well, you sly little rascal," said the old woman.
"'T
tomorrow you'll need all your faculties to meet my Gamjabar."
And she was gone, pushing his mother out, closing the door with a solid thump. Paul lay awake wondering, "What's a Gamjabar?" In all the upset during this time of change, the old woman was the strangest thing he had seen.
"Your reverence."
And the way she called his mother Jessica, like a common serving wench instead of what she was, a Bene Gesserit lady, a duke's concubine, and mother of the ducal heir.
"Is a Gamjabar something of Arrakis I must know before we go there?" he wondered.
He mouthed her strange words.
"Gamjabar. Kwisatz Haderach."
There had been so many things to learn. Arrakis would be a place so different from Caladan that Paul's mind whirled with the new knowledge.
Arrakis. Dune. Desert planet.
Thufir Hawat, his father's master of assassins, had explained it. Their mortal enemies, the Harkonnens, had been on Arrakis 80 years, holding the planet in quasi-fief under a Chome Company contract to mine the geriatric spice Melange. Now the Harkonnens were leaving, to be replaced by the House of Atreides in fief complete, an apparent victory for the Duke Leto. Yet, Hawat had said, this appearance contained the deadliest peril, for the Duke Leto was popular among the great houses of the Landsrod.
"A popular man arouses the jealousy of the powerful," Hawat had said.
Arrakis, Dune, Desert Planet.
Paul fell asleep to dream of an Arrakeen cavern, silent people all around him moving in the dim light of glow globes. It was solemn there and like a cathedral, as he listened to a faint sound, the drip, drip, drip of water. Even while he remained in the dream, Paul knew he would remember it upon awakening. He always remembered the dreams that were predictions. The dream faded. Paul awoke to feel himself in the warmth of his bed, thinking, thinking. This world of Castle Caladan, without play or companions his own age, perhaps did not deserve sadness and farewell. Dr. Yui, his teacher, had hinted that the Frofalucas class system was not rigidly guarded on Arrakis. The planet sheltered people who lived at the desert edge without Cade or Bashar to command them. Will-o'-the-Sand people called Fremen, marked down on no census of the Imperial Regat.
Arrakis. Dune. Desert planet.
Paul sensed his own tensions, decided to practice one of the mind-body lessons his mother had taught him. 3 quick breaths triggered the responses. He fell into the floating awareness, focusing the consciousness, aortal dilation, avoiding the unfocused mechanism of consciousness, to be conscious by choice, blood enriched and swift flooding the overload regions. One does not obtain food safety freedom by instinct alone. Animal consciousness does not extend beyond the given moment, nor into the idea that its victims may become extinct. The animal destroys and does not produce. Animal pleasures remain close to sensation levels and avoid the perceptual. The human requires a background grid through which to see his universe. Focused consciousness by choice. This forms your grid. Bodily integrity follows nerve blood flow according to the deepest awareness of cell needs. All things, cells, beings are impermanent. Strive for flow permanence within. Over and over and over within Paul's floating awareness, the lesson rolled. When dawn touched Paul's windowsill with yellow light, he sensed it through closed eyelids, opened them, hearing then the renewed bustle and hurry in the castle, seeing the familiar patterned beams of his bedroom ceiling. The hall door opened, and his mother peered in, hair like shaded bronze held with a black ribbon at the crown, her oval face emotionless, and green eyes staring solemnly.
"You're awake," she said. "Did you sleep well?"
"Yes." He studied the tallness of her, saw the hint of tension in her shoulders as she chose clothing for him from the closet racks. Another might have missed the tension, but she had trained him in the Bene Gesserit way, in the minutiae of observation. She turned, holding a semi-formal jacket for him. It carried the red Atreides hawk crest above the breast pocket.
"Hurry and dress," she said. "Reverend Mother is waiting."
"I dreamed of her once," Paul said. "Who is she?"
"She was my teacher at the Bene Gesserit school. Now she's the Emperor's truth-sayer. And Paul..."
She hesitated.
"You must tell her about your dreams."
"I will. Is she the reason we got Arrakis?"
We did not get Arrakis.
Jessica flicked dust from a pair of trousers, hung them with the jacket on the dressing stand beside his bed.
Don't keep Reverend Mother waiting.
Paul sat up, hugged his knees.
What's a Gamjabar?
Again, the training she had given him exposed her almost invisible hesitation. A nervous betrayal he felt as fear. Jessica crossed to the window, flung wide the draperies, stared across the river orchards toward Mount Siyubi.
You'll learn about the Gamjabar soon enough, she said.
He heard the fear in her voice and wondered at it. Jessica spoke without turning.
Reverend Mother is waiting in my morning room. Please hurry.
The Reverend Mother Gaius Helen Mohiam sat in a tapestried chair watching mother and son approach. Windows on each side of her overlooked the curving southern bend of the river and the green farmlands of the Atreides family holding. But the Reverend Mother ignored the view. She was feeling her age this morning, more than a little petulant. She blamed it on space travel and association with that abominable spacing guild and its secretive ways. But here was a mission that required personal attention from a Bene Gesserit with the sight. Even the Padishah Emperor's truthsayer couldn't evade that responsibility when the duty call came.
Damn that Jessica, the Reverend Mother thought. If only she'd borne us a girl as she was ordered to do.
Jessica stopped 3 paces from the chair, dropped a small curtsy, a gentle flick of left hand along the line of her skirt. Paul gave the short bow his dancing master had taught, the one used when in doubt of another station. The nuances of Paul's greeting were not lost on the Reverend Mother. She said,
"He's a cautious one, Jessica."
Jessica's hand went to Paul's shoulder, tightened there. For a heartbeat, fear pulsed through her palm. Then she had herself under control.
"Thus he has been taught, Your Reverence."
"What does she fear?" Paul wondered. The old woman studied Paul in one Gestalten flicker. Face oval like Jessica's, but strong bones. Hair, the Duke's black, but with brow line of the maternal grandfather who cannot be named, and that thin, disdainful nose. Shape of directly staring green eyes, like the old Duke, the paternal grandfather who was dead.
"Now there was a man who appreciated the power of bravura, even in death," the Reverend Mother thought. "Teaching is one thing," she said. "The basic ingredient is another. We shall see."
The old eyes darted a hard glance at Jessica.
"Leave us. I enjoin you to practice the meditation of peace."
Jessica took her hand from Paul's shoulder.
"Your Reverence, I..."
"Jessica, you know it must be done."
Paul looked up at his mother, puzzled. Jessica straightened.
"Yes, of course."
Paul looked back at the Reverend Mother. Politeness and his mother's obvious awe of this old woman argued caution. Yet he felt an angry apprehension at the fear he sensed radiating from his mother.
"Paul?"
Jessica took a deep breath.
"This test you're about to receive, it's important to me."
"Test?" He looked up at her.
"Remember that you're a Duke's son,"
Jessica said. She whirled and strode from the room in a dry swishing of skirt. The door closed solidly behind her. Paul faced the old woman, holding anger in check.
"Does one dismiss the Lady Jessica as though she were a serving wench?"
A smile flicked the corners of the wrinkled old mouth.
"The Lady Jessica was my serving wench, lad, for 14 years at school."
She nodded.
"And a good one, too."
"Now you come here!"
The command whipped out at him. Paul found himself obeying before he could think about it.